Okay, so we're holding in the middle of Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13 of Sefer Shoftim. Where exactly are we up to? That's a good question. So we reach Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15, and what we've had so far in the Perek is that the wife of Manoah, who the name is not mentioned in the Navi, although Chazal tell us that her name was Sal Alphonis. So she a Malach appears to her and tells her that she is going to have a son and that he will save Bnei Yisrael and that she should be a Nazir, and that she also, while she's pregnant, or even before, should observe the laws of Nazirus. And we had some Mefarshim that said that even the father, Manoach himself, should also keep the laws of Nazirus leading up to that. And Manoach basically davened that he should also see this Navi or this angel. I think they're not sure exactly who this was that appeared to her. And he also davened, and the Malach indeed comes back once again to appear to Manoach's wife, and then she runs and gets Manoach, and then he gets to meet the Malach himself. Somebody asked last week, you know, after Manoach davened, why does the Malach come back to his wife again? Why doesn't the Malach come to him? So the Medrash actually asks that question, and it gives two answers. The first answer is in order to not hassle, I can't think of the right English word for this, but in order to not go back on what he had said before, meaning this confirms that if he would appear to someone else now, it might be understood, I suppose, that there was a new message and that his original message wasn't true, or didn't have to be kept. So he came back to her again, and again, you know, reiterated the message to confirm that this isn't changing, this message that I gave to Mrs. Manoah the first time around. Second answer the Medrash gives is just simply to say, L'chavava al-Bala, in order to endear her to her husband, that, you know, look how she must be a tzaddikah, she must be very righteous if she is once again meriting the Malach coming to her. And then the Malach basically seems to give the same message over again, and we mentioned the pshat of Rav Schwab last week, Rav Simon Schwab, that the Malach was actually telling her that, or telling him that he also should observe the laws of Nazirus to do, you know, in order to be engaged in proper chinuch, the father has to be a role model and has to be keeping the same halachos that he expects his children to keep. So picking up from Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, so it says, Vayomer Manoach al Malach Hashem, and Manoach said to the Malach of Hashem, Natsana Otsach, let us hold you up here. Vinasa Vafanecha Didi'izim, and we should prepare before you a goat. The Mefarshim explains that he wasn't sure if he was a Navi, a human Navi, a human prophet, or if he was in fact a Malach. And he was saying, if you are a human, so then come home with us. Natrana, you know, stay with us, come to my house, let us serve you a meal. And if you're a Malach, then Nasa Lecha Gedi'izim LeKarbon, let us bring a Karbon for you or to you. The, you know, interesting thing that he would want to bring a Karbon to the Malach. So I'm not sure if he just didn't understand that he shouldn't bring a Karbon to a Malach. We'll see from the response that may be. or if he thought that some way this was to be a conduit, you know, some he could serve, bring a carbon to Hashem through the malach, you know, to the malach before Hashem. But he was saying, either come to my house, or nasa lefanasa gidi izim, or let me bring a carbon from a goat for you. Simply, you read, I think the pasuk just reads, you know, stay with us and we'll make a goat for you. Hayomer malach Hashem el Manoach, and the malach said to Manoach, imtat reini lo'ocha b'lach necha. If you hold me up, I will not eat from your bread. And if you're going to bring a carbon, then you should bring it to Hashem. You should bring it to Hashem. Because Manoach did not know that this was a malach. So continuing on the approach, which was the Malbim's approach, I didn't mention that he wasn't sure, and Manoach had been offering him either, you know, if you're a man, so come to my house to eat, and if you're a malach, so let me bring a carbon for you. So then we understand the malach's response, that he's responding to each part. If you know, hold me up in your house, I'm not going to eat your food. And if you want to bring the carbon, well, don't bring it to me. Hashem ta'arena. You should bring the carbon to Hashem. And then the pasuk continues, you know, ends off with ki lo yada manoach ki malach Hashem hu, because Manoach didn't know that he was a malach. Now, what is that going back on? What was because he didn't know that he was a malach? What is that modifying, let's say? What did he do because he didn't know that he was a malach? So, how did that work? You know, if it was going on Manoach's request, so that maybe would fit in better after Manoach, you know, makes his statement, or his invitation. Like it should have said, and Manoach said to the malach, stay with me, or let me bring you a carbon, because he didn't know if he was a malach or what he was. It's a little bit out of place here, like it's after the malach gives his response, that's when it says, because Manoach didn't know that he was a malach. So, right. No, certainly, we understand that maybe so, that he didn't know. It's just bringing it into this place. The juxtaposition in the pasuk is just noteworthy. It kind of stands out. If you hold me up, I'm not going to eat your food. If you're going to bring the carbon, bring it to Hashem. Because Manoach didn't know that he was a malach.
It kind of reminds me of situations where to not embarrass someone, you sort of reveal what's going on, but you still give them the sense of figuring it out on their own. He's like, well, if you hold me up, I'm not going to eat, as if he was offering food, and if he wasn't offering food, you know, if you want to bring an offering, bring it to Hashem, you know, sort of without saying, you know,
right.
You know, this
without
is what's
saying
going
it's
on.
Clear.
Without embarrassing him, almost letting him come to his own conclusion of what's going on.
Uh-huh. So I think on a pashtut that level, just on a simple approach, the Mefarshim just say, you know, that it was going back on his request. I believe, yeah, so like the Radak, for example, says it's going back on Manoach's request. It's going on the words Natsra no, so let us hold you up. That the reason why Manoach made this request was because he didn't know that he was a malach. That's on the on the Pashut level. The Chida actually has a very cute shot here. The Chida references a Gemara. The Gemara says that when a person is taking a vow to bring a carbon, so the Gemara says he shouldn't say Vahashem Ola, Vahashem Shlomim, for Hashem and Ola, for Hashem and Shlomim, because lest he say Vahashem and then die without finishing his sentence, and he'll have been mochi shem shemayim v'atala, he'll have mentioned God's name in vain. So, rather he should say, Ola LaHashem. I'm going to bring an Ola to Hashem. I'm going to bring a Shlomim to Hashem. You should say the carbon first, and then the name of Hashem, because then it's a complete sentence. And, okay, if he dies right after that, he never fulfilled it, I guess, but that, you know, would be an onus. But at least he had a complete sentence in making his vow. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara in the Darim. So says the Chida, based on this, now a Malach would certainly, you know, a Malach knows that he's not going to die in a moment. So a Malach should have no problem saying, LaHashem Ola, LaHashem Shlomim, that you should bring for Hashem a Ola for Hashem a Shlomim. So why did the Malach look in the Pasuk? The Malach says, he says, Ola LaHashem. He says an Ola for Hashem. He could have said LaHashem Ola. He should bring for Hashem an Ola. But rather he says an Ola for Hashem. Why didn't he just say it? He knew he wasn't going to die. He's a Malach. So why didn't he just say it normally? Because Manoach didn't know that he was a Malach and he was still keeping it under wraps, I guess. And had he said it in the way that a Malach could say it, then he would have revealed, you know, who he was. But instead he said it in this other direction. He said first, LaHashem. Sorry, first he said Ola LaHashem in order to continue to disguise his true self, continue to disguise who he was. It's a cute pshat. We'll come back and once we see a few more spoken, we'll offer another approach as to what the significance of those words are. Vayomer Manoach Amalach Hashem Mishemecha. And Manoach said, Pasuk Yedayin, to the Malach of Hashem, Mishemecha, what is your name? Yavo Divarcha V'Sibadnucha. For when your word comes, and we will honor you. Meaning that we want to know who you are. Again, he didn't know that he was a Malach. He thought he was a Navi. He said, who are you? What's your name? In order that when your Nevuah comes true, that we could find you and we could honor you for who you are. Once we see the Nevuah come true, who are we going to honor? We're going to have to find you. What's your name? How are we going to find you? The Chaim Kanievsky is bothered. Like, what does he think? He thinks this Navi of Hashem wants to be honored. Like, what he wants a gift. What does Manoah think that this Navi would want that he's requesting? You know, who are you so we could find you to honor you? So he says what Manoah wanted was he wanted to make him the Sandik, to be able to hold the baby at the brit. Because he gave the prophecy that this baby is going to be born. He said, you as the prophet who predicted this birth, you should be the Sandik. And we have to be able to find you. What's your name? How are we going to find you after the birth of this child? What does the Malach respond? Vayomer, lo, Malach Hashem. And the Malach of Hashem said to him, Lama zet yishal lishmi. Why are you asking my name? The who? Feli. And it is Feli. Now what does that mean? So first in the Parshim say, Lama zet yishal lishmi. Why are you asking my name? He was saying, why do you, I don't want any cover. I don't need any honor. Why are you asking my name? You're asking so you could come and find me, so you could honor me. Why are you asking? I don't need any cover. I don't need the honor. So you don't need to know. Now what is the response to who Feli? My name is Feli. So first of all, we have to understand the root. We have to understand the root of that word is Hey Lamed Aleph, which means like a wonder, like Nifla'os are wonders. It's a Pele, you know, in Shiva's terms we say now. Like a Pele. It's a wonderment. Like it's crazy. So what was he responding to who Feli? So many different Pshatim here, the simple approach based on the Medrash that many of the Mepharshim bring is it just means it's covered. It's mechusa, they say. It's covered. It's hidden. Not sure why that relates to the word the root fella, but that seems to be the main pashut pshat, simple understanding approach, is just that it's covered up, it's hidden, and the Targum also has a similar thing. It's mufrash, and the Targum translates it as mifarash. It's separated. It's beyond you. It's beyond your understanding. You know who I am, what I am. I guess a name sort is supposed to really define that person or that being. Here in this case, it's a malach, and he's telling him, it's beyond you. This is beyond you. Yes, we'll get to that. Yes, very good. We'll get to that in a moment. Other approaches are that he was telling him that a malach gets his name based on his mission. A malach, right? What is a malach? So the Rambam spends a lot of time on this, but a malach is a messenger, right? So basically he's defined by what he's here for. That's what he's here for, right? So what is his name? His name is whatever he's here for. So what was this malach here for? So we could offer two approaches. Let's see the next pasuk, and then we'll offer our first approach. The next pasuk reads, "Vayikach Manoach es gedi ha'izin ve'es ha'mincha," and Manoach took the goat and a mincha offering, "Vayal al atzur la'Hashem," and he brought it up onto a rock for Hashem, "Umafli la'asot," and there was some wondrous deed, some action that was a pella, that was a wondrous thing that happened. The Manoach the Ishto Roim, and Manoach and his wife saw what happened. What was the Mafliva Asos? What was this amazing thing? So, look at the next pasuk. Vayehi, and it was Va'alos Hala'av Me'al HaMizbeach HaShamayma, and it was when the flame went up from on the Mizbeach to the heavens. Vayal Malach Hashem B'Lahav HaMizbeach, and the Malach of Hashem went up in the flame of the Mizbeach. U'Manoach V'Ishto Roim, and Manoach and his wife saw this. Vayipulu Al-Paneim Arta, and they fell on their faces to the ground. So it doesn't explicitly tell you exactly what happened with the carbon, but it seems that there was an amazing fire. The carbon was burnt up, and the malach also disappeared in a wisp of smoke and descended with the flame. Right, exactly. He went up with the fire. So this was the mafli la'asum. This was the wondrous thing that was done, was that the malach went up in he made the fire come forth from the stone, and additionally he went up with the fire. So a lot going on here. So just coming back to the name Feli. So right, we see in the very next pasuk, after we are told in pasuk Yudches in verse 18 that the malach's name is Feli, then we see in the next pasuk he does a masli la'asos from the same root. He performs a wondrous act. And so some of our can say that that's the Malbim suggests that's where he got his name. That's why he was called Feli, because his mission here was, you know, to make this wondrous act. That was part of his mission at least, and that defined his mission, and therefore he was here to do a mafli la'asos, and therefore his name was Feli. Right, that's really what he was telling them, was, you know, you're not going to be able to find me, I'm going to be gone soon. And then one more approach to the word Feli. So, what was he here for? in addition to this. His other mission here was to tell, I mean his main mission I would say, was to tell Manoah and his wife that their son Shimshon is going to be a Nazir. Now what does the Torah say about a Nazir? How does the Parsha of Nazirus start? A person who will be mafli, who will do this wondrous thing to take a oath of Nazirus, to become a Nazir. So we see the word Nazir, in that word Nazir itself, in the parsha of Nazir. When he talks about Nazir, so his mission here was to tell them about this Pele, this wondrous deed, this wondrous act that the son is going to live, that their son Shimshon is going to live as a Nazir. In fact, the Medrash in Parshas Naso Darshan that learns out that pasuk Ishti Yafli Vindor Neder Lahazir, that it's in fact hinting to this very event. The Medrash says that you find that Moshe Rabbeinu himself hinted to the Nazirus of Shimshon in the Parsha of Nazir. And it's to teach you that there's nothing in Nevi'im and Ketuvim that isn't hinted to in the Torah. In fact, there's an entire Sefer, we've quoted it before here, called Niflos Mikaras Hashem Yisfara, which I haven't gone through extensively, but the little bit that I've seen of it seems to be that he is finding hints to everything that happens in Nach, in Nevi'im and Ketuvim, he's finding hints to in the Torah itself. We've touched on it here before, back I think when we talked about Gidon, we learned a little bit from that paper. But so the Medrash actually says, it says, if, right, the verse says by Nazir, it says, Ish ki afli vindor neder lahazir. So the Medrash in Parshas Naso says, Ish is referring to the Malach that came to tell Manoah's wife about Shimshon. He's referred to as a Ish. Tiafli, whose name was Peli, Lindor Neder, Nazir, Lahazir, Lahashem, as it says, as he says, that he will be that the boy will be a Nazir. The Medrash is telling you that Moshe Rabbeinu is hinting to this event, Ish, Tiafli, Lindor Neder, Lahazir, the man, the angel that's going to come, he's referred to as a man in the Pasuk, he will be Tiafli, he'll be the Peli, he'll be the, his name is Peli, he will come and tell about the neder, the Hazir Hashem of Shimshon. So, okay. Now, we're going to also have to address this interesting language, Umafli Ra'asos, which we are probably familiar with. This is the only place in Tanakh that these words appear, and the words Mafli Ra'asos, which appear in Pasuk Yud Tet. And we are hopefully familiar with these words from the bracha of Asher Yatzar, which a person says after using the bathroom. The person says, we say, Rofei Chol Basar Umafli Ra'asos. He cures all flesh, all people. Umafli Ra'asos. This is the wondrous thing. So, why did the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, when they composed the bracha of Asher Yatzar, why did they choose the words from our Navi here, Umafli Ra'asos, of all places to borrow from, you know, for the bracha of Asher Yatzar, from the great act that the Malach performs here? This is the only place in all of Tanakh that those words appear. They're clearly borrowing it from here. Why would they choose from here to borrow for the bracha of Asher Yatzar? That's a question we're going to have to address. Just want to read two more psukim before we come back and put together a few ideas that we've mentioned. So, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Vilgo Yosaf, Od Malach Hashem Leheiro, Shal Manoach Vel Isho. And the Malach of Hashem did not continue Leheiro, to appear to Manoach and his wife. Az Yada Manoach Kimalach Hashem, who then Manoach knew that it was a Malach. When he didn't come back, that's when Manoach knew that this wasn't a Malach. Right, so what the Mefarshim say is that, you know, a Navi may also be able to take part in a miracle, a blast of fire or something like that, but a Navi would come back. He wouldn't disappear and not come back. The fact that this, right, he went up in flame, but the point is that he didn't come back. The fact that he didn't come back, then he must be a Malach. He was a human. Why?
I'm a Noah. I see this whoever he is. He jumps into the flame. If I thought he was a human being, I would have thought he'd come on up.
Come back out
on the other side. Of the altar. He'd appear on the other side, run around the altar, and look for him.
Right.
He's not there. He no longer appears to me.
Yeah. So, it's along those lines. And the Farshim say that a Navi, I don't know exactly what they mean, but that it's possible for a Navi to be involved in a miracle where he would go up in flames, but they say he would come back. And where does that happen? I'm not sure. Right, I don't know. Right, it's a good question. Why do they need to come up there?
Maybe not going up in flames, but certainly being
surviving,
in flames.
Surviving, right. Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, surviving the fire. The Malbim speaks it out. He says, until now, he had a little bit of suffix, a little bit. Maybe he was a man of Ish Mofet, which may mean a man of miracles or magic, and he was hoping that he might come back, but after he saw that he was gone, so then he knew that he was a Malach and had returned to his place.
When I make the movie, he's going to run around the altar. He's not going to stand in the middle.
I look forward. I want the movie to be complete with all of the pshatim that we have, all the mefarshim. Let's rewind. That was according to the Malbim. This is how the Radak understood it.
That would be a long movie.
It will be a long movie. Very good. So, Vayomer Manoach al Ishto, and Manoach said to his wife, Mos Namus, we are surely going to die. Ki Elokim Ra'inu, for we have seen God. We've seen a Malach, we've seen something that we, you know, that's it. This is the end for us. Now, why did... Oh, very good question. Where do you get the concept that if you see a Malach, you're going to die? So the Malbim says over here that he really says it. He says, look at what I wrote back by Gidon, because Gidon also meets a Malach. So he writes back there, the Malbim writes that he thought, Manoach thought, that it's impossible for a human being to see a Malach. Now really we have to give a little hafdama, we have to give a little introduction to this. There's a major, major dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban as to whether a human is capable of seeing a Malach, an angel. Yes.
I'm looking at Pshat.
Yes.
Pshat says, most people see Elohim Ra'inu.
Right, for we have seen God.
About an angel.
Right. Now, you can't actually see God. What?
Anyway, the point is he doesn't say anything about an angel in this.
Right. Now, he understands that this wasn't like God in human form. So what is it that he saw? So he understands that it was a malach. The Mefarshim here all say that, first of all, the word Elohim in the first place doesn't necessarily mean God. Elohim is the word that's used also for idols, for foreign gods, for Elohim. It's also used for angels because it means a force that it could mean either God in his role as the source of all powers, but it can also refer to the powers that God has set in motion in the world.
So wouldn't he have known of the story of Abraham and the three angels? He would have known Abraham as
That brings me to the, maybe he held like the Rambam, okay? So the Rambam and the Ramban have a major machlokus about whether it's possible for a man to see a malach. The Rambam holds that a malach is by definition a spiritual being. It cannot take on a physical form in the world. And anybody in the Torah that it says saw an angel, it was just a vision. And he says it, really, he starts with Avram. Because the Pasuk says, Vayera Elov Hashem, the Elonei Mamre. And Hashem appeared to him in Elonei Mamre, in this place, and he was sitting there, right? And then it just goes into the story. But it doesn't say anything about what happened when Hashem appears to him, right? And Hashem appears to him in what? And then what happened? What, did Hashem say something? It doesn't say anything, right?
So who wounded Yaakov's thigh?
Oh, so that's one of the Ramban's questions on the Rambam. Very good.
So,
also hard to square that with the difference between the appearance of the angels to Abraham.
So the Rambam says they were all visions. They're all visions. The Ramban has questions like this, like who wounded Yaakov and who destroyed Sodom, and different questions like this. That when you learn Parshas Vayera, not coming up not too far off, make sure you see the first Ramban on the Parsha. You can also listen to Rabbi Grossman gave a shiur on it last year or 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I guess. Parshas Vayera, it's probably available on the Kola website somewhere. An excellent shiur going through this whole topic. And bring the responses that the other commentaries give on behalf of the Rambam, so to get the extensive discussing over there. But that's the Rambam featuring Mor and Vochen in the Guides to Perplex, that a malach cannot take on a human cannot take on a physical form. And any time we come across someone in Tanakh who saw a malach, it wasn't with their physical faculties that they saw him. It was with the mind's eye. It was in a vision. It was in a dream. And the Rambam actually mentions our case also. He mentions these psukim, the malach of Manoah. He includes that in his list, that this is all a vision. And the Ramban in Parshas Vayera, takes the Rambam to task for it and asks many questions on him and argues that no, certainly it does happen. Okay, so we'll have to offer some explanations. But the Malbin says here that it's funny. The Malbin shot here is almost like he thought like the Rambam, but he was incorrect. Malbim says, why did he think he was going to die? Because he thought that a malach cannot be seen by a human being. It's a spiritual force. It can't be seen by a human being, except as the person is about to die. Because when the person is about to die, so then they're almost like a malach, and the neshama is leaving them, and they're now, they've entered a new spiritual plane, and it's right at the brink of death. Only at the brink of death will a person be able to to see a malach. And so he says, if we just saw a malach, he says to his wife, we're surely going to die. That means we're about to die. And his wife reassures him, Batomer lo ishto. And his wife said to him, next pasuk, Lu chafet Hashem lahamisenu, had Hashem wanted to kill us, well, lakach miyadenu ola mincha, he wouldn't have taken our offering, our ola and our mincha, v'lo heranu es ko'elang, he wouldn't have showed us all of this, v'cha'es lo ishmiyanu kazot, and he wouldn't have told us about all this, you know, the news that we're going to have a son, and that if I'm going to die in labor, I don't need to know what's going to be afterwards. You wouldn't have told us all this, and we'll hopefully come back to this topic next week and discuss it more, exactly what her response was, because I want to get to some other things. But she basically reassures him and says, no, it can't be that we're going to die, and in fact they don't die. So it seems, according to this approach, that the that he thought like the Rambam, that he couldn't have possibly seen a malach unless he's about to die. And look, they survived.
He was a Rambam follower. He was a Rambam follower.
Yeah. So that's the Malbim shot here. Now Rav Schwab has a different approach here about why he was worried that they were going to die. And it really comes back to the first question that we asked today back in Pasuk Tes Zayin, verse 17, 16, where Manoah says that, the Malach responds to Manoah, I'm not going to eat from your bread, and if you bring an ola, I'm not going to it to go to Hashem, because Manoah didn't know that he was a Malach. Now, what does that have to do with his desire to bring a carbon? How does the fact that he didn't know that it was a Malach connect to the fact that he had desired to bring a carbon? So, what's that?
He wouldn't have offered food to him.
Right, he wouldn't have offered food to him. So I think he's asking this based on the fact that it's coming right off the words in Tasa Ola, Rashem Talena, if you'll bring an Ola, you should bring it to Hashem, because Manoah didn't know that he was a Malach. So what's the connection between bringing a carbon and Manoah not knowing that he was a Malach? None. Okay. So, fine. So let's... Again, there's... Manoah offers two things. One is that I'll give you food, and the other is that, you know, you'll bring a carbon. And it's only at the very end of the pasuk mentioned that he didn't know that he was a Malach. That's why the Mepharshim are bothered. You know, if it was just that he shouldn't have offered him food, then it should have said it by the, you know, he offered him food because he didn't know that he was a Malach. There seems to be a connection to him bringing a carbon. So, nobody's actually saying this statement. It's just the Navi, the narrator, telling us that Manoah didn't know that he was a Malach. So, okay, so whatever, let's see what Rav Schwab has to say about it. Rav Schwab says that Manoah thought that he was a Navi. He heard him predicting the future, and he therefore thought that he was a Navi, and even though at that time the Mishkan was still in Shiloh, the tabernacle was in Shiloh, it was forbidden to bring a carbon on a bama, on an outside Mizbeach. You were only allowed to bring a carbon in the Mishkan, you weren't allowed to build an altar outside the Beis HaMikdash or outside the Mishkan. So Manoah should not have been allowed to bring a karban. However, since a Navi told him, you know, Hashem, you know, that you can bring a karban, to Yahweh Ola Hashem, you should bring a karban. So therefore, Manoah brought a karban because there's a concept of a harasha that a Navi occasionally will, you know, paskin something against the Torah. It's called a harasha. It's a one-time sack. And if a person is a known Navi, then he's allowed to. That occurs occasionally, and it's necessary. Eliyahu Navi did it on Har Carmel. On Mount Carmel, he brought a carbon. And that will happen occasionally once the person is known to be a Navi. Now, why
is it not usually in a situation of emergency, though? Or are those explanations after the fact, like,
yeah,
sort of based on Eliyahu?
Yeah, I don't know about emergency. It's necessity. And here, for, you know, the circumstances necessitated it. Whatever, you know, that I can't tell you why it was necessary, but that's how what he thought. So he thought that it would be permitted. Now, what happened? He soon learned that it was not, and he brought the carbon. And then he realized that actually this wasn't a Navi, this was a Malach. And if a Malach tells you to do something, well, against Halacha, well, there's a concept of Lo Bashamayim. The Torah is not in Shemayim. If a Basco, a heavenly voice, comes down and tells us to go against the Torah, we don't go against the Torah. Lo Bashamayim, it's not in heaven. The Torah is given to us for us to do what we will with it, what we need to, and the way we interpret it, the way we understand the Torah. But it's not given to a Malach to tell us what to do. It's interesting that a Navi could, even though he would be getting it through prophecy, but that is different than an instruction directly from what? Exactly. So says Rav Schwab that what was he saying? He was saying we're going to die because this was a Malach and not a Navi. Had this been a Navi, then this would have been permitted to bring a carbon, you know, bachut, to bring a carbon outside of the Mishkan of Shiloh, and then it would have been a proper harasha, a proper special situation where we would be allowed to have brought the carbon. But most Namus, we're going to die because this is a Malach and not a Navi, and therefore this was, I was not allowed to listen to this Malach, and I shouldn't have brought the carbon.
Under the principle of
Lo Bashamayim.
The problem with that explanation is Lo Bashamayim does apply to a permanent halacha.
It what?
To a permanent halacha.
You're saying it only applies to permanent?
Yeah, the example we have in the Gemara is about the status of an oven.
Right.
For all time, in all cases, it was not a para'asha.
So you're questioning, perhaps, that Lo Bashamayim wouldn't apply to a para'asha.
Exactly.
Okay, that's a good question. That's a good question. The Schwab assumes that it should, but I hear that's a good valid point, that perhaps maybe it shouldn't. Maybe Harasha would not apply, Lo Bashamayim he would not apply to a Harasha, to a one-time exception, and he would be allowed to listen to a heavenly instruction on an individual
on a one-time basis.
Because it's a very good point, because it's not reinterpreting the Torah, it's giving a new instruction for a one-time basis. Rav Schwab assumes otherwise. Rav Schwab assumes that it would apply, and that he therefore cannot listen to the Malach. Only had he been a human Navi would he be allowed to listen to this Torah Shah.
This distinction was not discussed by
why him, but not by Rav Schwab.
Well, I know there's a midrash about sanctifying the new moon, that also brings down the concept of, you know, the angels look to the earthly base sin to sanctify the new moon, not the other way around. And really, that's a new one-time instance
every month. Well, that's more of an ongoing every month, and it's based on an existing Torah principle.
Right.
So this is what Mr. Sapper is saying. We're not telling you that the Torah says anything else. We're not adjusting. We're not changing anything in the Torah from the heavens. We're just saying one time go around. So I can hear it going either way. Now I didn't get to the Masli Vaso, so we're gonna have to save that for next time. But Mr. Sam will get to that.